This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you had a great Christmas, Hanukkah, and whatever your belief is, we welcome your input on this show. That's what our show is all about. It not only invites people from all political stripes, but whatever our belief system is, even if you're a non-believer, we look forward to hearing your insights. And if you're so inclined, give us a call, 877-217-5757. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And producing today is Alondra Villarreal. 877-217-5757 for the Reverend Chris Andrews, who's been with us a few times over the last many years. For more than 20 years, he was pastor at one of the biggest and brightest churches in Baton Rouge, First United Methodist, and he has since been with Jubilee Pioneers and is a big part of our community with Rebuilding Together Baton Rouge. But this is the holiday time, and for those of us who are Christians, it is a special time. And for those of us who are not, it is still a special time. And I've often wondered, Reverend Andrews, what it's like for those who don't believe during this season. How do they do? How do they get along?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think the season is so all-encompassing that it would be hard not to kind of get swept up into aspects of it, and hopefully in a way that's positive and energizing for even those who may not have a particular creed that they want to live by.
And every now and then when we talk about these matters, we end up having people, and for good reason, inquire about the commercialization of Christmas. We have plenty of that, don't we?
We do. We're a capitalist society, and if there's a way to make a buck, we're going to figure out how to do it, and I think we've done that pretty well.
But I bet you provide gifts to your loved ones.
Yeah, gifts are wonderful aspects of what it is to love somebody and to show that you care and that they mean a great deal to you. And, you know, the monetary value of a gift is, of course, always secondary. It's the symbolic underpinning of it. What does it represent? What are you trying to say with it? And you don't have to spend a lot of money to say some really lovely things to people who are lovely in your life.
How did you and your beautiful bride spend the holiday?
Well, we were in our home in Ventris, Louisiana, which is just out of New Roads. We're fortunate enough to purchase a house there earlier this year. And so this was our first Christmas in a new house, and we've done a lot to make the house ours. And therefore we had a decision to make a low key Christmas in terms of personal gifts to one another, because the house is our mutual gift and we've enjoyed it very much.
And at this time of the year, it always helps to have a chef in the house.
And I have a fine chef. In fact, she was on WAFV yesterday morning, helping people to figure out how to use some of the Christmas leftovers. And she's got a new book coming out in 2022, Lanyap Leftovers. And I know that people will be interested to
well,
get
we
Suzanne's
need to
effort.
Have her on our show again.
Yeah.
That would be appropriate.
Yeah. She would love to do that.
You've done well, Chris Andrews. Now, in the New York Times on Sunday, as I was reading it at Waffle House, by the way, I commend people who work on holidays. We talked about tipping last week, but for people who work on Christmas Day, for heaven's sakes, literally, I think 20% is a low tip.
It is, and these are the dear people who keep the trains rolling, you know? They do so much that's hidden, really, but without them, we couldn't function.
There was a fine editorial from a guy who was involved in three Republican administrations, Reagan and the two Bushes, Peter Winter. He's a religious scholar, and there are a few of those, but he noted that Jesus, in his time on the earth, asked far more questions than he gave answers. He liked to turn the tables on his people, especially those who were in the business of asking questions themselves. And Luke, an expert in the law, asked Jesus, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" His reply took the form of not one question, but two. What is written in the law, and how do you read it? And that's the way Jesus operated. Quite often, he put it back in our lap, didn't he?
He did indeed. And, you know, that's really, I think, an important guide for us in our time to ask the question, perhaps, what would Jesus do? And what does it mean to, you know, to love a neighbor? One of the great parables he told is the parable of the Good Samaritan, which was prompted by someone's question. And Jesus ended it by saying, which one then is the neighbor? And go and do likewise. We think about this time of COVID and mm-hmm. people refusing to get vaccinated. What does it mean to love your neighbor but to protect yourself so that you can protect others?
Wiener in his editorial continues that Jesus spoke in parables to reveal the truth to some and hide it from others.
Yes, he said that, you know, to you have been given insights into the kingdom. And I think that's always the case. I think there are certain individuals who they're not better than others, but they just have a gift to see the spiritual depth and dimensions of things in ways that perhaps mm-hmm. some can't. And to these is a special responsibility to offer the deeper eternal truths of the faith.
A few years ago, I was at the Church of the Good Shepherd in Beverly Hills, the only Catholic church, by the way, in Beverly Hills, where Frank Sinatra and many other famous people were laid out. And the pastor read the biblical passage that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And there was an audible groan from the congregation.
Well, in that place, I think there are a lot of rich people. And sometimes the truth can get a little uncomfortable.
Well, is it harder for a rich person to find Lod Cook, who died mm-hmm. actually last year?
Yeah.
He told me, and he was rich. He said, a lot of rich people don't believe because they become so confident in their own prowess that they lose, in his view, lose perspective on who made it all possible.
Well, idolatry is a very real thing, and one of the great sins of that the Bible points out. But, you know, someone like Lod Cook, who came from Castor, Louisiana, he stayed rooted and grounded in some basic humility that kept him, you know, pointed in good directions. And certainly his wealth was a gift in so many ways to other people. And we have the aspects of that in this community with the Lod Cook Center and other things that he did that were good for a lot of people.
877-217-5757 and talk@talklouisiana.org. I have gotten some emails for Reverend Andrews, who has been in this game a little while. He was pastor at Louisiana Tech's church.
Yeah, Trinity United Methodist Church in Ruston, right on Tech Drive in I-20.
How many marriages have you performed, give or take, in your career?
Jim, I have really no idea, but I would say probably in the thousands. Done weddings in all sorts of places, all kinds of configurations of relationships.
And a listener notes from prior iterations on this program and others, you're no fan of covenant marriage. We don't talk about that as much as we used to, but there are some people who still opt for covenant marriage. You don't like that.
I don't. And the reason I don't like it is not to do with anything of the word covenant, but because it's state intruding its own self into a very sacred union. And covenant marriage is a gimmick, if you ask me. put forth during the Jindal years, and it's a silly thing that doesn't strengthen marriage, doesn't weaken marriage. It just is a totally unnecessary thing.
And when you get in one, let's say you have a spouse who's abusive, it's hard to get out, isn't it?
Very difficult. Yeah. It is a patriarchal view of marriage and of the relationship between a man and woman that ultimately could be very harmful to someone who's abused, and usually that happens to be the woman.
Usually.
Yes.
And today, just by chance, I ended up having breakfast with Murphy Paul at Louis, the chief of police, who has his hands full, 145 murders now in Baton Rouge this year. But he said over 20% are domestic violence cases.
Yeah, I think today's paper, front page, indicates that we've seen an increase in that.
And that's something, as times get tough, and this has been a tough 2 years. If you bring it home, obviously the person who's going to take the brunt of it is your spouse. And unfortunately, they're guys, mostly guys, who get some kind of satisfaction on beating up their spouse. And sometimes they even take it to a higher level, and that is a disgrace.
It is a disgrace, and it's a sad and tragic thing. And we are living in times that try human souls, as the saying goes, and that comes out sometimes in some very negative and unfortunate ways.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Dan.
Yes, Reverend Andrews. How can we look to God for purpose in life? You know, in Numbers 15, it says the children of Israel found a man in the wilderness gathering sticks on the forbidden day. So they go to God about what to do about it. And God says to Moses, the man shall surely be put to death.
All right. Dan, sounds like he's not convinced, and many are not. But that particular passage, is he reading it right?
I'm not sure, Dan. I would have to open my Bible and do a little study on that, do a little exegesis. But let me just point out that in the Bible, there are many theologies, and you've got to be discerning and choose the theology that matches up with Jesus, in my opinion.
We're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And this is a time of year to take stock on what's happened and look ahead, and hopefully we'll all have better years. And the last 2 years have been quite challenging, and we're in the midst of another surge in COVID cases. Omicron is taking its toll. Fortunately, for those who are vaccinated, it's not killing nearly as many people. So maybe we're on our way to herd immunity, but getting there is going to be an inexact process, and quite often it doesn't hurt to consult a higher power. And Chris Andrews is a man who I think we hear his words. We know he's from the left side of the political spectrum. 877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Which brings us to a question from Holly in the Garden District. Quite often liberals are tainted as non-believers or heathens. Is that unfortunate?
I think it's very unfortunate. I think that liberals and conservatives can have firm faith and believe and be orthodox. I just happen to read the scriptures in such a way that puts me on a side that says, you know, let's do what's right for our brothers and our sisters, and that sometimes makes you a liberal, I guess.
Well, and Jesus, one thing he did do was he encouraged us not to judge people, and quite often both sides of the political spectrum judge others far more harshly than we would like to be judged ourselves.
Very true. There's an interesting article yesterday about an Ollie class that brought together conservatives and liberals.
George Morris.
Yeah.
That's a neat concept.
It is. I think when we sit down and look at each other and try to listen and talk civilly, some good things can happen.
Let's hope so. But it's going in the wrong direction. And it's funny, the other day I played John Kennedy's Christmas message, and I don't know what he was thinking, but he actually recorded a message and sent it to some media types and started out jingle bells, Biden smells, and goes on from there. And some people were upset, and this listener and contributor to WRKF, great supporter, says, my Christmas was lovely, but prior to it, I was really disappointed that you lowered yourself to read John Kennedy's political doggerel on the show. And Kennedy, of course, sent out another message that was just about as explosive, but that's John Kennedy. And sometimes we need to hear and see and read these things to understand where a person's coming from. No harm intended, but some people, of course, took offense.
Well, I am offended, too, by John Kennedy in many instances. And I think that, what we need to appreciate is that words matter and words have power. And how we relate to one another often begins at the very basic place of how we speak to one another. And when we begin to use names and we begin to degrade people with our language, then everything just loses and goes down. Jim, you may remember, it was interesting, when Burl Cain was running Angola, he forbid cursing in Angola and stopped. I don't know how he managed to pull that off, but he said something I thought was quite profound and right on. He said, when you curse someone, then you can do other things that are bad to them. And so we have to start with this kind of basic respect for one another. Our words do matter.
John Kennedy says in his latest message, fa la 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 la, it's almost Christmas Day. This was sent, I think, right at midnight Christmas Eve. the birth of our Savior, a day of thankfulness and time to be with family, though I can't be sure whether or not the woke left celebrates this holiday.
John Kennedy is a sad case, if you ask me. He's a man who, by common consensus, is quite intelligent, and yet he has not brought his intelligence to the public discourse, in my opinion. He's played the game. He likes to, push buttons, and I guess that gets him some reward and votes and political support. But to me, he's just pushing himself in a direction that is not good for him or for anyone.
And quite often we, in politics, demonize the other side. I remember Ray Strother saying when he went to Washington in 1980 from Baton Rouge, there were 5 political consultants in Washington. Right. He says now there are thousands. And as much as we complain about it, negative advertising works. And so politics has become a freewheeling discussion of things that are often irrelevant, and it's often designed to taint the opposition.
Yeah, and appeal to the basest emotions of human beings, which is not a good place to go.
877-217-5757 for Reverend Chris Andrews of Jubilee Pioneers. How many years now with Jubilee?
I guess we're about 10 years old.
10 years old. And still meeting on Monday night. You're meeting tonight?
No, we will. One of the nice things about Jubilee is we're kind of a laid-back little community, and so we take some holidays.
But
so
you meet at the Bocage Racquet Club
Monday nights. We'll be there on the 3rd of January.
The 3rd of January, mm-hmm. which is the day before the Dale Brown Court is unveiled at the Assembly Center. But usually Monday night, 7 o'clock, right?
Right.
7 mm-hmm. o'clock yep. at Bocage Racquet Club, and you accept all
everyone.
Comers.
Love and compassion. That's what we live for.
Well, that's
live
good.
By.
Here's one from Rachel's asking, wanted me to ask, how many funerals have you conducted?
Oh, goodness. Rachel, I would say it has to be somewhere in the thousands, I would think. I've done as many as 4 funerals in a day.
One time my dear friend Jules Demacord died, mm-hmm. and he was kind of like me, kind of lone ranger. And when he died, I was actually listed as the next of kin. And I went to his bedside as he died, along with Darren Mann. We were there at Baton Rouge General, and I thought, what a tragedy. This man who taught 3,000 students. I put an extra zero there, but 3,000 students over the course of his career. And at the end, he was
alone.
He was all alone. Mm-hmm. And he made no preparations for a service, and it was held about a month later at Ravenhorst, and Chris Andrews came in and did a beautiful job, but he said, I never met the man.
but we were there to honor life and honor every life is unique. Every life is an image of God, and every life is sacred.
And you captured the essence of the man. You talked with a lot of people who knew him.
Right, right.
Said he liked the fruit of the vine, which was true.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. And
as long as it's not done to excess.
Right? Exactly.
Right?
Moderation and everything. But, we celebrate life when we gather in those occasions. And as I say, if we have a sense of the sacredness of life, then every life that has called us to be together is indeed looked upon as a gift. And we need to reverence that life, and we need to celebrate it.
877-217-5757, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi,
good
Phil.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Reverend. I'm seeing something to come along now that meditation and teaching people how to meditate is a really incredible tool to help relax, for one thing, but also to get in touch with the spiritual world through meditation. And they're teaching children how to do it, and there's even a film on Netflix about how to meditate. What do you think about meditation? And actually, thank you so much, sir, for your help and your work.
Well, meditation is an ancient, ancient practice, and it certainly has been shown to have great positive benefits. You know, we can make it complex or very simple. Breathing deeply is one way to meditate. You can do that while you're sitting at a traffic light. You can do that before you walk into a store, so that the way you greet the cashier is maybe affected by that just simple moment of taking time to realize you're about to enter a place where you will be face to face with another image of God. Meditate on that and see how that transforms who you are and what the world looks like to you.
Do you believe in the power of prayer?
I do. I do. I think prayer is a deep and holy mystery, and I pray all the time, but I don't mean, and I don't want to sound sanctimonious about that. My prayer life is an ongoing, ever-present thing that I tried to line up with Paul's word where he said, pray without ceasing. Well, how in the world do you do that if you shut your eyes all the time and bow your head? We can pray without ceasing by making life a prayerful experience. And so, yeah, I do.
I remember Edwin Edwards said he didn't pray.
Well, you know, he may not have done it in a formal way or practiced it, and maybe he didn't. And I don't know that everybody has to pray.
But he, on a one-on-one level, was a very ethical man. We'll talk about that when we return after this with Chris Andrews. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, along with Caroline Menville Alonso. And Chris Andrews is with us for a few more moments, and then we'll hear from the incomparable Stephanie Ferries, the proprietor of Zeeland Market. Your number, 877-217-5757. And Chris Andrews, for many years, had as a congregant none other than Charles E. Buddy Romer, who died July 12th. Governor of Louisiana, 1988 to 1992, and what a character he was.
Character indeed, and a delightful person, really. Buddy, I think, had a great heart and really loved to affirm people, tried to make everybody feel like they were the most important person he could ever speak to. You're the man.
You took the words right. He used to say that to women.
Oh yeah. 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 I mean, he was incredible. And you know, we lost Buddy Romer. We lost Edwin Edwards.
We did.
Both of those leaders were real people. And I remember calling Governor Edwards shortly after his release from prison. And I had written him a letter, and I said in the letter, I know you won't remember me, but I was wishing him well. I didn't call him. He called me and said, thank you for your letter, and I want you to know you were wrong in one instance. I said, what's that, Governor? He said, I know exactly who you are. I've met you several times. It's incredible people. And Romer manifested that as well, I think.
Yeah, as much as they occasionally tangled, and there was some real animus between those two at times, there was a lot in common, too.
There was. They were. The way they approached things, they were political animals.
And they were both married three times.
Yes, indeed.
But very, you know what? In both cases, the third wife
was the charm.
The third wife helped them get to the finish line, too, extending their lives. So they made good choices. And we commend Scarlett and Trina, who did great work keeping the former governors vibrant for as long as they could. And, you know, Edwin Edwards lived to be 93, almost 94, and Buddy Romer died at 77. But Romer, he was diagnosed with juvenile diabetes when he was 29, and he fought that. People don't realize how that affected him. And some of the things that the mood swings all that was related to his health.
It was. And diabetes is a very serious and tragic disease. I mean, and he did struggle with it. And in many instances, I think it had a profound effect on how he reacted to things and what he did.
Let's go to Mitchell in Sherwood, who's been waiting patiently. And if you'd like to get in under the wire with Chris Andrews, 877-217-5757. Mitchell, you're on Talk Louisiana, sir.
Good day to you. I want to know what Chris Andrews know about the MAR, the M-A-A-R, the true Bible. And I also want to know what his interaction is with Afro-Americans.
All right, well, I don't know what he's talking about regarding the true Bible, but at any rate, I do think he makes a good point. You know, quite often we see a white Jesus. Jesus yes. probably wasn't as white as I am.
No, indeed. And I'm too not familiar with what he's referencing in terms of scriptures there, but I will say this, that, you know, in my role as director of Rebuilding Together Baton Rouge, most of my days are spent in neighborhoods that are predominantly African-American and of people of color. And that has been a tremendous blessing for me personally. And I hope in some small way I've been a blessing for the friends I've met in North Baton Rouge.
And since we're talking a bit about the end of life and, you know, almost a million Americans have died of COVID. And for the last 2 years, the life expectancy in our country has actually gone down. Opioid is another big story about how that's affecting people of all ages and all economic and racial sectors. But the New York Times every year at the end of the year in its magazine section features many people who died in the year that we're talking about, this case, 2021, the lives they lived. And one of the features this time is Larry King. He made it, but Rush Limbaugh didn't. But he was fascinated with death. Jasmine Hughes said he didn't want to die, but he did want to talk about death. And he noted in the feature that June 9, 1943, when King was nine, he was walking home from the library when he saw three squad cars parked in front of his apartment building. He was 9 years old, and he checked out nine books that day. As he approached the peculiar scene, he recognized his mother's screams. An officer, a friend of his dad's, pulled King aside, drove him to a movie theater, broke the news his father had died of a heart attack. And King, heartbroken and resentful, didn't cry, never went back to the library again, he says, that library. He wrote it in his memoir, My Remarkable Journey, and from that day on, I was nervous if I saw a squad car in my neighborhood. If one parked at my apartment building, I'd start running home in fear that my mother had died. And he spent his life dodging death. He made it 87 years, lived a full life, as we know. Death is something that we all must face at some point.
None of us are going to avoid that. And, we can fear it. We can try to resist it, but it is a reality for us all. And, you know, that's where I think faith becomes such a comfort, that we were born in love, and we die into the love that has made us. And somehow or the other, we go on. I believe that. I don't know exactly how to describe it, but I do believe it.
When you get to the other side, how do you envision God?
I envision God as pure love, and there are a lot of symbols of that, symbolic language about it, rather. Light, calmness, peace. Certainly not the old man with the gray beard sitting on some throne and passing out judgments, but an all-encompassing love that brings us into a oneness that we have sought all of our lives and that we find ultimately in the mystery of the afterlife.
Thank you, Chris Andrews.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
Fine man. Remember, January 3rd, Jubilee Pioneer, 7 o'clock, Bocage Racquet Club, and Chris hopefully will be back soon, as will his beautiful bride, who is one of the top chefs in North America.
She is indeed. Thank you, Jim.
877-217-5757 is your number, and we're joined by another staple in our community, Stephanie Ferries, who is the proprietor for Zeeland Market, has been for 32 years. And before we get there, I remember you back in the day at Louie's Cafe.
Oh, yes. I was just a young girl then.
Well, you're still young, but that was quite a foundation. You go back to Louie's on Chime Street, don't you?
That's correct. I think I was like 21 years old when I started with Jimmy Weatherford at Louie's. Worked with him till 86. We moved over to State Street. We actually walked over that day to the new location. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was with him till 1989 as his manager.
And then you opened your own place.
I opened my own place, Marino's Fine Foods. We changed the name to Zeeland Street because that's the name of the street that it sits on, 2031 Perkins, 32 years.
32 years, and you've had to face some challenges, as have other restaurants, and some have not made it. You got Jubin's right down the street from you that's been closed almost 2 years. How do you stay open in these times?
Very carefully. things have definitely changed. But because we are a small community in that part of town, I have a lot of support. I have had to hire new staff. Maybe last year they've been with me a year. But that is something that is always going to occur. You're always hiring. But we have a couple of people that have been with us maybe 2 to 3 years. And, of course, I always have my legendary mother's recipes.
Uh-huh. Well, if you'd like to talk to Stephanie, and she, I think, legitimately, as a listener notes, is the Leah Chase of Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757, or talk at talklouisiana.org. 32 years on Perkins Road at Zeeland, and it's Zeeland Market appropriately. And Tracy at the Capitol asked, when the music, is it going to return? You were doing concerts for a while.
We were had hooked up with Dyson House, but sadly, we don't think that's going to occur again right now. We've had to separate and move on because of the pandemic. But maybe, I don't know, you know, in the future, if things changed, I would love to do it again.
Right now, you're just trying to keep the doors open.
We're serving breakfast and lunch, 7:30 to 2. And that's about all we could do. We look forward to 2022 and hoping things will change.
And you mentioned your former associate, Jimmy Weatherford, and another listener. This is Ken. He notes that Louis is now closing at 3 o'clock. It used to be at 24. That's 3 p.m., not 3 a.m. So it's basically open now, what, 6:30 to 3. So it's gone from 24 hours to 9.5 hours.
Just don't know much about if there's enough traffic over there at LSU right now. And, of course, you're always looking for staff. So to keep a place open 24 hours, I'm sure you have to have a large staff. And that's just not happening right now.
We've had this wave of Omicron now, and flights are being canceled, and people are getting it, obviously. That has to affect you, too. You could at any moment have to shut down, I would think.
Well, you have to look forward to what other things you can do. So we looked at, can we do catering? Yes, we can. I've also started to do personal chefing, where either I will cater it and bring it to your home, or I will come to your home with one of my staff or two of my staff, and we will cook in your home.
All right, and we're about to go to a break, but a listener notes that the aforementioned Charles E. Buddy Romer III was a frequant guest at Zeeland. He ate there almost every day. So,
Mr. Romer had to have fresh food. He had to have real food, not processed, because of his diabetes. So he was a frequent customer, at least every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday, and usually brought an entourage with him.
Yes, sir.
And we'll talk about that and more from Stephanie Ferries. And how does somebody who owns a restaurant celebrate the holidays? We'll find out. I suspect it was quite a feast at Stephanie's house. But we're going to a break, and we will return. And again, 877-217-5757. Back in 2 minutes with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Stephanie Ferries, the proprietor at Zeeland Street Market. In 32 years, she's been doing it. And she is a person of color and a female and a great success story in our community. And it's great to catch up with Stephanie as always and occasionally go by her fine establishment, which is weathering the COVID situation. But I mentioned Christmas. I know your daughters are, I would suspect, they're home for the holidays. The two Dartmouth graduates, Kelsey and Kirby, are they here?
Yes, sir. Kirby is home from New York. She's living in New York City right now. She works for Data for Progress. And Kelsey is a graphic artist for the Royal Standard here in town.
And Kirby worked for us for a while as a producer.
Yes, so she did.
And now she's in New York, graduate of Dartmouth and conquering the world. And you've got to be proud of your girls.
I'm so proud of both of them. They're really fine people.
Fine people, and occasionally work at the restaurant.
They do come in and help Mama.
Okay. Now, the listener wanted you to expound upon Buddy Romer. What did he usually consume when he would come there?
If it was Wednesday, of course, it's fried chicken day, but he always chose a salad and two other vegetables like black-eyed peas and carrots.
He was staying away from the fried food?
No, he would eat.
He'd eat the fried chicken?
After
all, he's a North Louisiana boy. Yeah.
But he would also choose to eat four vegetables.
Four vegetables. And he's a man who savored life and good food. Some would call it soul food.
Yes. Well, basically everything at Zeeland Street is cooked by us. And that's the dirty little secret that a lot of people don't know, that a lot of restaurants are serving. processed food. A lot of trucks bring in the food almost already prepared. On the other hand, we are actually still peeling our potatoes, still peeling our sweet potatoes, cooking your black-eyed peas.
Like Jimmy at Louie's, you're not a chain. You're doing it on your own, which has some advantages and disadvantages, but it is interesting how some of the chains have done okay in COVID. Some, of course, have suffered like everybody else, but it's hit or miss, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. But those who are in the know and who want to be healthy have to search out real food now. It's
processed food isn't going to cut it?
It's not going to cut it because you got to keep your immune system high right now because of this pandemic, because of all these different variants. So if you want to stay healthy, you need to do it a couple of different ways. And eating real food, healthy food, tends to help you keep your immune system high.
Now, you're like me. You're around people all the time, and you're in a restaurant. So it's even more of a risk, shall we say, than being in a radio studio.
If I come out front, I'm making sure that I am protected, and I'm wearing my mask in the kitchen. Basically, the last 2 years, I took command over the food, over the kitchen. I went back in the kitchen, redid the recipes, and I stayed safe by just running that kitchen.
You have not gotten COVID?
I did get it last year, last Christmas, and we closed for 2 weeks.
I didn't know that, but you came back strong.
Yes.
Now, have you gotten your shots?
Yeah, of course.
All three of them? Boom, boom, boom?
No, two, and I'm going for the booster this week.
I think that's a good idea. And your girls?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They both stayed COVID-free. And, of course, they've gotten their shots.
Now, your daughter, you mentioned, lives in New York. And Mark Ballard was on our show last Thursday, as he is on most Thursdays. And he noted that in New York City, everybody's masked up. They're taking this far more seriously than we are.
She is able to work from her computer. So she is spending the next 2 to 3 weeks here. I think maybe that might be one of the reasons.
But we never know what's going to happen. Who would have envisioned this? Your restaurant, you just gotten that music thing going, and then this
happened. We did 110 concerts within a year, a year and a half.
And a listener notes
John Burns.
He was in Christian Street Market, dude.
He was Dyson House. Dyson House.
He is a guy who is a music aficionado, and you brought some great acts there.
Quite a few from all over the world.
Notes, the Iguanas played there. The Iguanas, among many, many others. Some blasts from the past.
We really were able to meet a lot of bands. We were able to meet a lot of people who love music. And that's one aspect of the future that I'd like to bring back. Mm-hmm. Music and food goes together.
Yeah.
So if things quiet down, of course, I'd love to bring it back.
You ever had to throw anybody out of your restaurant?
No.
And all those years?
Well, no, I don't think so. No, nobody wants to
mess with with Stephanie.
Well, talking about governors, Governor Edwards ate there quite a bit also with his brother, and he loved the white beans and sausage being from what was this?
Well, he was from Marksville.
So,
but yeah, he did not eat what would be called a moderate diet. And he had a heart bypass operation, too, at the end of his fourth term, which would have been 1995. And he lasted another 26 years. And he ate cracklings. I mean, he didn't exercise a lot, but God blessed him with great genes.
He did. He did have great genes.
But Buddy Romer, on the other hand, he did not have that blessing, and he had to work to stay in the game for 77 years.
Well, I'm glad we were there for him. He was such a sweet, gentle man. He would speak to anyone. Even though he was eating, a lot of people stopped by his table. He usually sat at the first or the second table right at the front door, and he commanded that space.
Yeah, I remember Donald Trump in an interview with Maureen Dowd said he hated it when he would be at a restaurant and somebody would come over and shake his hand. He's a germaphobe, and this was pre-COVID.
Not Mr. Romer.
He would shake hands and then he would just continue eating, and that was the way he operated. He used to hang out at Books A Million down the street for many years when it was open. He and I closed it for a lot of years, and there were some funny stories. I learned a lot about life, more about life than politics, from Buddy Romer in those evening sessions at COVID.
Yes, sir. That was Buddy.
That's on my mind at Books A Million, pre-COVID.
We have quite a history together because I fed him maybe 6-7 years, and they actually showed some pictures of us at the funeral.
Well, and they should. They should. You were a big part of his life. And I remember seeing Lynn Sanderson and his son Chaz would come in there with him quite a bit.
Yes, they actually came in recently.
Well, right before he
died.
On his birthday, October 4th.
Yes.
That would have been
recently. Yeah,
a year ago. But he fought it hard, and he was a good man, and he actually was funny. And I remember closing down Books A Million many years with him. They'd close at 11, and I'd come in sometimes late, like 10:30, and he'd be sitting there, and quite often he'd be the only guy in there. But one night he was in there, and at the other table I recognized this fella who had been arrested for trying to shoot Romer several years earlier. And I said,
what a combination.
I said, Governor, you know that guy at the next table? He tried to shoot you a few years ago. He goes, you're kidding. He says, I'm going to my car. He says, please watch him. And fortunately, yeah, we didn't have a repeat incident.
No, he didn't. He didn't travel with any security.
No.
He didn't have security.
He didn't have any security at all. And then once he drove, he liked BMWs. He drove BMWs. And I remember some prankster when he was running for governor in 95 last time put like a Foster for Governor sticker on his car. And he drove around for about a week waving at people with the top down and his convertible. And on the back it said Foster for Governor.
He didn't know. Yes.
But he and Edwin Edwards, they crossed swords and they had a past. And his daddy was Edwards' commissioner of administration. Now, his daddy didn't have great health either, but he got 88 years, and Romer, the son, only got 77. And I miss him, and I think of the number of people notable we lost in 2021, and we did lose two governors, and we lost them 8 weeks apart, July 12th. And it was Edwin Edwards, and Buddy died on May the 17th. So
right.
Those guys can't be replaced historically, or if you knew them, it was hard not to like them because they had the common touch.
I just want to say thank you also for that fine article right there.
In the Business Report. Yeah, by Maggie Richardson, who's a foodie.
Maggie and her family also are clients that I've been feeding a couple of
notes
years.
Notes that when you were a young lady in Mississippi, you'd put in a roast at 5:30 in the morning on Sunday, and it'd be ready when you got home from church.
That was my grandmother, yeah. She started the love of cooking fresh food for me.
So what did you serve yesterday or 2 days ago for Christmas?
Let's see. We had a little bit of everything. I did some dry-aged steaks, ribeyes. I did cornbread dressing, of course, scalloped potatoes, baked turkey, fresh cranberry sauce. Kelsey made a dessert, and we also did a couple of pies, peach cobbler. We have a unique situation.
To feed a small army there.
Right now, I am living with my daughter next door to my ex-husband, and we shared Thanksgiving together as a family.
Well, I like that. Let there be peace in our time. It's time to go, but we'll be back tomorrow. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.